A Gathering of Days, an American Holiday Sampler. For Mother's Day, here's Mothers, produced by Jenna Allison.
She has sort of a bovine build.
She has kinky hair.
She's got a double chin, which sort of grows bigger.
She looked most like an Indian. She's real dark and high cheekbones.
She has enormous eyes, right?
A sadness around her mouth.
They say that I resemble her a great deal.
She has rings under her eyes, like me.
When I look in the mirror, I see my mother.
Do you hear that music?
What is it?
That's Mommy playing the piano.
When I'm watching a good program, or when I sneak out the house and go play, she calls me back in, and then I have to clean my rabbit cage. Then it turns out to be after doing my piano lessons, then take my...
A lot of my problems came with not honoring the fact that keeping a house took an awful lot of work. You know, you go slam-banging through it, and you don't remember that you've been maybe out in the barn, and you've got hayseeds all over you, and you're sprinkling those on the floor.
It just seems to me that lint is the bane of human existence. And it is my mission in life to remove lint from the host, whatever the host may be, and destroy it immediately. I leave a cleaner world behind me, lintless.
That woman would know what was going on in my life without anyone having told her.
And it was so uncanny. It's scary. I was a little boy, and I went around the corner to the corner store, and there was an old kindly shopkeeper there who had all the little candies that still used to cost a penny then. So I went around there and I bought some candy, and the old man who ran the store bent down behind the counter to pick up a penny that had dropped, and I grabbed another pair of those little plastic red lips, and I stuffed them in my pocket. So I went home, and you know, I was gonna show off my little lips to all my little neighborhood friends. So I put on my little lips and was proudly parading around and stuff. And my mom came out of the house with a belt in her hand. And she looked at me and said, "Did you buy those?" "No." It's never a good liar. So she tanned my hide with the belt. So that stopped me from stealing for a couple of weeks.
I think mothers have incredible power. They're just not ordinary people. And maybe that's what lingers from childhood, when in fact they did have so much power.
I had this very intense dream. My mother was a large black cat. And I remember that the cat had very sharp claws and very sharp teeth and really bright glistening eyes. And I remember being smaller than the cat. I felt trapped in the dream that there was no way out, and this cat, at every move I would make, would be pouncing on me.
The ancients had a very literal idea of the mother as the nurturer and then ultimately the destroyer. So that you had, for example, the image of the mother's breast with a bird's beak, to give both the idea of the mother as the creator and bringer of life and builder of life, and the idea of the mother earth that certainly will swallow up your life eventually after you die. The mother could give and the mother could take, and the mother was the ultimate source of power in that sense.
This the old saying, "I brought you in this world, I'll take you out." When I'm strutting around in a suit, getting out of my BMW, walking into my house, you know, that sort of stuff, she'd look at me and laugh and say, look at this boy. You think he being grown? Boy, I change your diapers.
Rock it, bye, baby. Go to sleep, little baby. Mama's gone again, Papa's on a stroll, and they left nobody here to hold you.
When a kid gets hurt, they rush over to them and help them up and put a Band-Aid on usually their knee.
They're pretty powerful because sometimes you just need her. You don't know why, you just need her.
Black sheep, black sheep, where your mama? She way down yonder in the valley. The birds and the flies are picking in his eyes, and the poor little baby cried, mama.
She placed me in an orphanage so that she could marry Mr. Troopin. And I was there for 10 years, and I didn't have any mother and didn't have any father. So I didn't even know what constituted a mother. I've never seen a woman in relationship to another person, male or female, having never seen any manifestation of affection on any level, right, between a woman and her child. I've never seen a woman pregnant. There was no way of me knowing how to define even a mother. I was just 10 gray years.
When I was 7, she was given 3 months to live. And if I wasn't immediately with her, you know, at that time, there's always that fear that she was going to be taken away. I remember I used to go to the hospital, and I couldn't go to the hospital because I was too small. But I'd go every night and wait in the dark, and my father would go and visit her in the hospital. And on some nights, she could get up, and I could see her silhouette in the window at the hospital up on the 4th floor. I knew which window to look to. And on some nights, she could get up and wave. And so I'd sit in the dark and wait in the car and hope there'd be a night when she could get up to the window and wave, and I'd see her silhouette wave to me.
I would be really miserable without her because I would always have to eat vegetables and fruit only.
I'd be missing the good lunches, and you see, my dad doesn't know how to do ponytails.
I think I have a picture of myself coming out of there. Let me just see. Out of the orphanage, I think there's a nice big one. That's me a week after I was out of the orphanage.
Look at that expression. How would you describe that expression on your face?
Sullen and sulky and nasty. And I must tell you about that. This guy Simmons, who was the superintendent, said, "There's your mother." And it was a rainy day. It was in February 2nd, 1914. It had to be a watershed event. She had a heavy coat on, and her coat was just drenched, saturated. And her hair anyhow, was all scraggly and wet also. And then she bent down over me and started hugging and Smutskin. And I said, Smutskin means means kissing and hugging, wet kisses, you know. What do you? I thought she must be out of her bird. And they said, "This is my mother."
I think that mothers are always involved in what patients come to talk about in psychotherapy. And if they don't come up in the first instance, they'll inevitably come up at one point or another. When there's a strong attachment, you expect similarity. You expect that this person is a kindred spirit. And when you bump up against the awareness, the reality that there are differences, it's shocking, and that can lead to disappointment.
I was a little of a problem because I was not of her kind. We were two different kind of people. She was a Victorian lady, and I sort of wasn't. My sister next to me, was much more of her kind. And they used to do sweet things together. They would put little ribbons on things. I was usually a thorn in her side, and she and I were often at sword's points.
Every day before I went to school, I remember dreading coming down the stairs because there was always some kind of comment like, "Look at you. Your hair's unkempt. You have no belt on. Your shoes are a mess. You're going to go to school like that? You look disgusting. What kind of image is that?" You know, and it was just on and on and on.
I think my mother saw in me everything that she probably wanted and she didn't do for herself. There was two words that were constantly used, "shut up" and "stupid." Stupid was just my name in the house. It was always "stupid." I think the reason why she wanted me to shut up is because I was saying what she was thinking.
Ever since I was a child, I'm the seventh of nine kids, and I've always thought that my mother was wacko. She was very gregarious, kind of flamboyant, and I was kind of a solemn child, so she used to just, everything she did pretty much embarrassed me as a child. She would take us on picnics to the beach all the time and jam all of us into the car, and we had about 10 coolers and about 50 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that she'd made and a dozen hard-boiled eggs in the carton. And she would sometimes leave one of us at the picnic grounds or the beach. She wouldn't start counting till she was in the car somewhere at a red light. She'd do like a head count because we're on each other's laps, and she was, you know, just... I think she even lost track of how many she had.
There is something so strange about being assigned a mother and then being stuck with that. And I think each mother-child pair is quite different. You're almost created into a mother by who your child is.
You pull the string, she's your plaything. You can make her or break her, it's true. Abuse her, accuse her, turn around and use her, then forsake her anytime it suits you.
I thought everything that was wrong was purely my mother's fault, and that I would never, ever be a mother like my mother. I thought my children would just follow me around and just think I was the most wonderful person in the world. And I held this until I gave birth. And being a mother has made me really appreciate and love my mother much more.
I remember when Kent was born, it startled me to find out that being a mother was a 24-hour-a-day job. And I think I grew up fast. I had a good time being a mother. I had a real good time. I wasn't really a soft, nice, cuddly mother, I don't believe. I think I had edges.
She was crying there in the nursery when the doctors first brought her to me. And I sang a little song called Alexis Rose. Mommy had to be cut open. A cesarean section was performed. They took you out and said that you were a girl. My world had changed. My Alexis Rose. Alexis Rose. How does it go? Alexis Rose, I love you so, I love you so. Alexis Rose, how does it go? Alexis Rose, we love you so.
We were at Sarasota, this fine motel along the ocean, and my brother and I were playing in the ocean, and he was in an inner tube, and there was a slight offshore breeze, and all of a sudden, he got about 30 feet out, and none of my family could swim, and the water was too deep, and he kept going out a little further and a little further, and pretty soon, here he was a quarter mile out. It just happened so fast, and he kept going further and further out, and I just remember as a kid watching my mom and my aunt crying and praying the rosary. Here my brother was, he'd see him and then he'd bob down and then he wouldn't see him and then he'd come back up and you'd see him, and they were huddled together and crying on the ocean side.
We are prepared for everything except motherhood. And when my son was born, I was frightened. I didn't know anything about raising children. And I used to put my little one in the carriage and I said, well, I see children walking around. They somehow grew up. I hope my son will grow up with the help of God or somebody.
He was a climber. And we had goldfish, guppies, on top of the piano. We had an upright piano. And he, of course, had to climb on top of the piano and knock the fish down, and they got in between the keys. And that was so awful, we all sat down and laughed. Well, you either have a sense of humor or you just die in your tracks, I guess.
Wally, would you go out and ask your brother if he wants butter or mayonnaise on his sandwiches?
Sure, Ma. Hey, Beaver!
What is it, Wally?
Mom wants to know if you want butter or mayonnaise on your sandwiches.
Tell her both!
Wants both, Mom. I heard.
Oh, there's the school bus, and I don't have his lunch ready.
I mean, I know it sounds like a stereotype, but I really thought families were supposed to be like Leave It to Beaver. I just never could understand why my dad never had a tie on when he was home. Why my mother never had an apron.
I grew up with that stuff too, and you watch this stuff on TV and think, oh my God, here's this woman in high heels and pearls every day, and everything's happy and nice, and I'm living in a home where there's always all these ratty screaming kids all over the place. Right, exactly.
I think we still cling to the myth of the happy family on the cereal box. At some emotional level, the image of the mother, I think, is the woman with the apron who feeds and protects and cushions her family and children. And as long as our cultural notion of what a good mother is only a perfectly loving, nurturing person, it has to fail. And children can never live up to the wishes and expectations of mothers, just like mothers can never live up to the wishes and expectations of their children. Then you're left with guilt.
She used to be like, she was so grumpy, you know, when I was little because I was a big pain. Now she says she feels guilty because she was always grumpy to me and I was only two. But I don't remember it.
She's my mom and I treat her as nicely as I can, but sometimes we get into fights.
So we were walking to the car and I didn't hug my mom goodbye. Then I called her back like about an hour later and said, sorry, but I was just real grumpy. I just felt guilty.
For the 9 months I carried you, growing inside me, no charms. For the nights I sat up with you, doctor, you prayed for you, no charms. Through the years, there is no charge. When you add it all up, the real cost of my love is no charge.
I wonder if Mother's Day is really a compensation, like a reparation for the guilt and negative feelings as a way to undo them.
I have really distinct memories of feeling like wanting to honor my mother on Mother's Day and hating her the rest of the time.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 35th anniversary Mother's Day program and the 54th Festival of Roses.
She is an extraordinary woman. So Mother's Day is celebrated with a lot of extravagance. We all honor and praise my mother and motherhood in general.
This year, we are now going to be honoring the special mothers who have been chosen over the past years. Each of these ladies is to receive a rose corsage picked freshly from this magnificent garden. And here to pin on the roses is Arlise Arletta. Now, if we could first have Rose Ruth Murphy, 1955.
That isn't going to stick
you. Thank you, dear.
You could think of Mother's Day as the oldest of festivals, not in the sense of a Sunday in May, but in the sense of the goddess cults of 20,000 years ago. It's so obvious, the connection between mother and new life, that it's been made in every culture all over the world and become part of the society's religion. The mother creates life, and then the Mother Earth takes life back when a person is buried. The mother to the ancients was a destroyer. That is certainly lost sight of by the greeting card industry.
Oh, and here, this is a good Mother's Day item. These all come from such amazingly interesting ideas of what a mother is and what motherhood is. Mothers are better than bandages. They take the boo-hoos out of the boo-boos.
This is getting frightening. We're this aisle goes on as far as the eye can
see. What are we gonna do? We can't read.
It narrows to a tiny point way off in the distance.
Here's one with glitter, a little pink glitter all around.
And now our hymn of praise.
As our youngsters were growing up, I think the Mother's Day, most of these days, were connected to the church one way or another.
The glories of my God and King, the triumph of His grace.
They'd usually read a poem, and they'd have a sermon, you know, about the wonderful mothers and dedication and hard work and all that stuff, which used to turn me off. This putting people on a pedestal and dressing them in a flowing robe, and it's just not real. I would much rather think that my family would remember me out on a cookout or something like that, than sitting primly, being beautiful.
She was the first to ever love me, the first to hold me to her breast. God bless her, 'cause she is my mother, and she'll be the last one I'll forget.
We give you a warm welcome to Grafton, West Virginia, and to the International Mother's Day Shrine.
It's hell, eh, country? This is a city, it's a railroad town. Right down here is the B&O Railroad, and then right below that is the Three-Fourth Creek.
Here's a sign out in front of the church. Could you read this to me?
The Mother's Day Shrine, at the request of Miss Jarvis, Anna Jarvis. The first Mother's Day service was held in this church on May the 10th, 1908, in honor of her mother. In 1914, President Woodrow Wilson designated the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day.
I should like to extend to each of you a most cordial welcome to this observance of Mother's Day here in the same edifice where the very first official Mother's Day was held on May the 10th, 1908. Each year at our Mother's Day services, recognition is given to the mother who has given birth to the most children. Anyone present who has given birth to as many as 10 or more? 10 or more, okay. I should, yes. How many? 8. 10, all right. Okay, let's give these ladies a hand. And
I just wanted a big family, and I don't mind work.
Sure, don't lose my supper.
It is a lot of work.
Oh, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of sleepless nights. I love Mother's Day.
What?
Makes me appreciate my kids more. I don't know that I appreciated them as much as I should have.
So now may we stand, unite our voices in singing the West Virginia Hills, and remain standing for the benediction by Reverend Hooper and for the organ postlude.
West Virginia hills are majestic and outright, with their plume of fame and glory like a prince in Manuel's land. Is it any wonder then that my heart with rapture thrills as I stand once more, loved ones, on those West Virginia hills? Beautiful hills, beautiful hills, how I love those West Virginia hills, beautiful hills. If for sea or land I roam, still I think of happy home and the friends among those West Virginia hills.
She had her flaws, and we all do. I've long since forgiven her, even for the things she did to me. So, you know, that was my mother.
No matter what happens to a child, a child will always love their mother, and I will always love my mother.
Her love was writing. Any time she had, she would sit down and write. And I see her writing at her desk. That was her little throne.
I'm sorry.
She was 85. It was a long, lingering death, and we had her in a little hospital. And I went this one time, and she was had her eyes shut. She was in bed in this little hospital. And she greeted me, and she knew me. And she was glad I'd come, and she was always very affectionate. And then she just took, she smiled, kept her eyes shut. And she said, "But you can go now, because I'm writing, and I'd like to be alone." You knew exactly what she meant.
even though she's two states away, she is with me every day. I'll see something, a dress in the store, and I'll think, you know, gosh, would my mom like that?
The first job you learn is being your mom's kid. Everything after that is just an additional assignment. I mean, that's the first one you get, and everything else is that you never get fired from it.
While she's not there right now, I mean, she's traveling the country right now, but she's not there, she's there. She's all over the place. She's gonna be here when she's gone.
Mothers was produced by Jenna Allison for A Gathering of Days, an American Holiday Sampler. For a cassette copy, you can call the Pacifica Radio Archive at 1-800-735-0230, and I'll give you that number again in just a moment. A Gathering of Days is a series produced by Jenna Allison and Addie Gevins with funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from KQED-FM in San Francisco, and from Soundprint. Special thanks to Addie Gevins, Michael Cousins, and psychologist Sue N. Elkind. The theme music was written by Susan Chart and performed by Hot Combo, accordionist Laurie Sammons, with Susan Chart on the clarinet. Again, if you'd like to order a cassette copy of this program, you can call 1-800-735-0230.